This episode is going to be about Gamehenge and the man who stepped into yesterday. When you and I were discussing doing this, and you gave me the list of shows to check out, you had said there was one that's the closest we'll probably ever get to this again. Why would they not ever do this, and why do you think they would not do this in its entirety again?
So one of the worst ways to make a fool out of yourself in trying to project what Fish is going to do is to declare matter-of-factly that they will never do something ever
Fair
again.
Enough.
I mean, just when you start to believe that. I don't see it being a big part of Fish's future. I mean, at this point, it's now over 20 years since they've done it, mm-hmm. and that's just such a great expanse of time. And, you know, their New Year's show 2 years ago is about as close as I think you're ever going to see to it.
Okay.
Many of the songs were played, but it was lacking the narration that typically accompanies it. The songs, I think, aren't going anywhere. I think all those songs will forever be a part of their rotation, some more frequently than others.
And none have been dropped.
No, nothing's been dropped
entirely. Some are more frequent than others, yes. But they continue to play them. They've all at least been played on the last
tour. They
run
the gamut from total staple to kind of once in a tour type rarity.
Is it something Fish fans would want to see?
I mean, people would lose their minds if it were to happen again. I don't think anyone would be disappointed if they showed up in, you know, the middle of 2016 and a Game Hen show broke out.
Jimmy, it's time.
Sly Dog Music Cast. Now here's your host, the Sly Dog.
Hello everybody and welcome back to the Sly Dog Music Cast. I'm your host, the Sly Dog, and welcome to part two of the Gamehenge Fish series. So thank you for listening to part one. I hope you really enjoyed it. If you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to that because it'll make what we're about to talk about will make sense. We're going to get into a little bit of the backstory of Gamehenge here. And hopefully the track by track, we'll see. This is quite a multi-beast undertaking. So without further ado, let's get back into me and Craig discussing Fish and Gamehenge.
I don't think you touched on this. We talked about a lot. The lead up. You mentioned that you were kind of slightly out of the loop, like you were hearing things or people that like, I swear Gamehenge is going to happen, but you know people probably do that all the time.
Yeah.
What was the lead up like to this? Like, was there anything that you look back on now? Because you probably watched the night before as well. Were there any little hints or anything that like you kind of look back now and go, well, that was a clue.
Yes. Yeah. Well, first of all, one thing I didn't notice was that the poster for New Year's, and it was the same thing last year, like the theme was ghost, which essentially what they did was like ghosts from the past, you know. This one was a castle, and there are on the left and the right hand side, there are kind of like abstract llamas, which once it's pointed out, you're like, oh yeah, those are llamas. I looked at it and I was like, oh, that's a pretty cool poster. The one thing though, after the first night, the first thing I saw was they didn't play any Gamehenge songs tonight that we're getting Gamehenge on New Year's. And I was like, they've gone a ton of shows without playing any songs from Gamehenge or The Man Who Stepped Into Yesterday. I'm not putting any weight in that. And then the same thing the next night. And then maybe the next night, but I mean, I didn't give any weight to that because that's not, you know, some of these songs, the fact that they didn't do like AC/DC bag, like, so what? Like, they don't always, you know, they play it often, but they don't play it like every four shows. So it's like anything with fish can be a coincidence. In this case, it wasn't. But I went in, not, and I was even mockingly saying it to Megan when we were watching. I was like, yeah, people are saying it's going to be a game henge. I don't know. And we'll talk about it. Maybe we should. But I'll talk about it when I talk about Harpua before we get into the track by track. But because there are a couple things that happen that hint at it before it actually happens, and the reveal is fantastic. But yeah, it when I realized it was happening, it was just like, holy shit.
So let's, before we do the track by track, let's lay out the storyline of this thing a bit, because people are going at this point. We've teased what Gamehenge is and done a bit of an overview, but you mentioned you had something you kind of wanted to read that might give us a little bit of idea of what the story is. And I do have to say, the story is loose. That's one thing about it. Like, I like what you said yesterday. You and I were messaging back and forth. You said it's kind of like the Beach Boys' Smile. It's an unfinished work in a way. But I think that allows things to move around. It allows the storytelling to be fluid. So it makes for a unique experience, because I listened to the last one they did, the 94 Gamehenge, in preparation for this, and songs are in different
This was
places.
the last time they played it before the July 94 show.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I listened to, and the songs were in different places. There's a totally different doorway into Gamehenge. That's a thing. A song acting as a door to Gamehenge. So it's loose. They play fast and loose with it. So kind of walk us through what is the basic overview of Gamehenge, because we're going to talk more about the songs themselves.
The thing I wanted to read was something that I grabbed from one of the fish almanacs to kind of kick off the conversation, which kind of this lists the characters, but it starts together with, it's not always easy to piece together who's who in Gamehenge from the songs which fish scatters throughout its shows. So here with, well, yeah, for hippies, they have a good vocabulary. So here with, the Farmer's Almanac presents character profiles of the main characters in the Gamehenge song cycle. And it goes through the AC/DC bag, Colonel Forbin, Aaron Wolf, Mockingbird, Achilles, and all that. Essentially, the story changes. So you can say that the 1988 cassette is the basis of it, the start of it. And interestingly, the show that has surfaced from 88 also has different arrangements of two of the songs, which are the same as on the demo cassette. They evolve. One of them is particularly interesting. But so basically what happens, the story is that there's a 52-year-old man, Colonel Forbin, who keeps coming across a door. And one day he steps through the door, and he is transported into the land of Gamehenge. Now, in the land of Gamehenge, now this is me synopsizing this, and it's probably not going to be good because I'm doing it off the dome. Gamehenge is where the lizards live. Now there is an evil King Wilson. There is the Helping Friendly Book, which is the book that all of the knowledge of the universe is in. If you ever hear a fish fan say, "Read the fucking book," they're talking about the Helping Friendly Book. It's a metaphor. And there are various characters in this story. There's Teela, who rides in on a moldy beast who Colonel Forbin falls in love with. In some versions of the story, she's a spy. In some versions of the story, she's killed. I'm a little bit hesitant to get into like the whole thing of the story because it changes. It changes between the cassette. I would say that the this New Year's was a very different rendition, including some very big changes. So the story is not static. I'm sure it was meant to be at a point, but then as it goes on, and it's interesting to hear like what makes a game henge is the narration. The five versions that I talked about that were played live and this past New Year's, they are game henge sets because of the narration. You could play a whole set of game henge songs. If there's no narration, it's not game henge. So basically it's telling the story. It's Trey telling the story of game henge that makes it what it is. There's a knight that befriends Sir Rutherford the Brave, befriends Colonel Forbin. There's Icculus, who is the god. And Icculus is another song that's not in any of these versions, but very obviously part of the story. So basically, it's kind of just a good versus evil story, much like other great stories like The Elder. And I'll say that because I was a fan of The Elder. And it's super geeky. I don't think I should say that I don't think that this is a good starting point for anyone unless you're a fan of musicals and you have a very open mind. And it took me several times to kind of get it. It was kind of like a novelty to me for the first couple of years, and then the more I listened to it, I was like, oh, this is pretty interesting the way these songs are fitting in. The songs are written from the point of view of the characters. I'll go into maybe a little bit when we go into the track by track about like what the song is in terms of the story or the character, if it warrants it. But I would say just a general synopsis, it's a very, I don't know if I'd say basic, but I mean there's not a whole lot to it. It's basically a the songs are telling the story, and we only have like an hour or however long it is. So, we can't forget McGrupp,
McGrupp.
the dog of Colonel Forbin, who's with him. And if you love dogs, you should at least watch the Game Henge from New Year's to see the little puppet dog with his adorable tail wagging, running across the stage, and then Mike hitting an open note on the bass and petting its head. These are the things that make fish wonderful.
I got two things to say from that. First off, yeah, one of my favorite things is like they had if you musical is a good comparison. Like they had actors on stage acting out the story as well. They had the dog puppet. They had the
For the first
multi-piece.
time. Like, it should be said that when they did this before, it was just them on stage with Trey narrating between songs. The New Year's was an all-out presentation with puppets and actors and narration, and it was probably as big as they could get it,
Right, yeah, like they had the multi-beast walk through the crowd to the stage. They had the famous mockingbird fly over the audience. It's all so cool. And
Which something goes wrong with the Mockingbird.
oh really?
I don't know if I don't know if you realize that, but there's something that was supposed to happen that didn't happen. I'll get into that when we get into that song. But
Okay.
yeah, there's some stuff that was supposed to go down that didn't. I also think that there might have been some missed cues or issues with monitors because there were a few times where it wasn't clear who was supposed to do the dialogue, whether it was Trey or Annie Golden, who was the actress who I'll speak about when we get to kind of like how the story starts in the New Year's one. But I mean it, as a whole, like I can't find fault with it. Like they put together a massive show and damn near pulled it off flawlessly musically and, just in terms of execution.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The other thing I wanted to point out was you kind of like said it's a basic good versus evil story. I think the biggest thing that changed about it, at least this is my observation on of it. I don't know if it's probably not the official take, but my take is so the original version of it when they used to perform it ended with Wilson, the evil king, getting killed and someone replacing him, and kind of that cycle of corruption kind of continues. As is politics, you could say. But this time it almost seems like the ending was more like Wilson survived, and the whole message is that the stuff in the Helping Friendly book you already have inside of you. Like you already know this stuff. Like if you were, I imagine if you open the book, it'd be blank because you already know the things in the Helping Friendly book. You know what you need to do to live a good life. So that's
Like
my
there's a
biggest
version of
takeaway.
this. Yeah, and I mean in original version of the story, Erin Wolf is a character who starts out as a positive force, but then realizes that he can steal the Helping Friendly book. So he ties the Mockingbird to a post, steals the Helping Friendly book, and then becomes the villain. That does not happen in this version of the story. So there's some very big liberties. I think a lot of some of the negative things taken out. Weirdly, some language in some of the songs changed.
Interesting.
Good ass, nipple, and there was another one. In Colonel Forbin's Ascent, he says he dragged his weary shit ass up the mountain. In his thesis, it's carcass up the mountain. In this show, it's body up the mountain. In Sloth, there's a slice your nipple line, which was changed to something about Charmin and Mr. Whipple. And I don't know why. Unless they were trying to make it family friendly for a reason, but like the rest of there is, profanity in fish songs.
Oh
They
yeah.
do have a song called Fuck Your Face. So, they're no strangers to profanity, but I do wonder why those were both changed, like specifically the nipple line, because it's always been that way. So yeah.
Very strange.
Anybody that did make it this far that's been a skeptic, once they heard the word nipple, they're like, oh, I'm out. I'm out. They're
Yep.
singing about a nipple.
No. Pulling the ripcord.
Yep.
So yeah, we've talked about the lead up, and then so the first set of that night. Let's start with the first set. We're not gonna go track by track on the first set, but at that point, like you, I'm sure at that point, just said, well, this is a good show. I remember seeing Reba was in the first set, which is also kind of like I guess in this same universe of songs that we're talking about, but.
I've always wondered about that because you have some songs that are definitely part of the story, some songs that weren't part of the demo tape but are obviously part of the story, like Punch You in the Eye or Llama, Divided Sky, Gillis, which is in none of them, but obviously is a character in the whole story. Yeah, there. But I'd always thought. And the list of songs that also relate to Gamehenge, I'd always been a little skeptical about. Like they in the shows before this one and in this one, which is why we'll talk about Harpua, there's a song that leads you to Gamehenge.
The doorway, essentially,
The Doorway.
as they call
And
it.
it happens during a specific song, or usually like narration out of that song. Those I think are they're borderline just because they're using that song to get you to Gamehenge. I don't consider it part of Gamehenge.
Right.
If Trey wrote it with that in mind, sure. But like, there's a song a Axilla, which is apparently part of Gamehenge, and I've not figured out why. I've also not read the lyrics, like, and studied them to figure it out. But like, what they do, and we'll talk about this more, is before the reveal. They give some hints to other songs that are part of Gamehenge and why, like how these songs and a character in this song relates to Gamehenge, which I thought was a really great setup and the first point where I was like, holy shit, I think we're getting in Gamehenge. So there are songs on the periphery. I think some are more obvious than others.
Was Reba the only one in the first set that was like kind of, you know, part of that periphery of songs, or was there anything else?
Let's see. We got Reba in the first set. No, everything else in the first set was pretty standard.
Okay. And then we got our second set. We start off with Down With Disease. And then we
Down
move
With
in.
Disease, which is a frequent second set opener. You know, yeah? It's they do this often. Second set will start, and usually it starts with Mike doing some weird kind of bass gargly noise. And there you go. And Sly Dog's doing it. I just saw it. I saw it again. The bass. So usually it'll start with some kind of like, you know, weird noise, and then right into the bass riff. And that'll usually jam out for 20 minutes. That is a very frequent second set opening jam. It was cut short. I think it was only like 7 or 8 minutes, and people were just like, well, that was kind of lackluster. In terms of like, you know, the song that usually goes places, and it didn't go very far. I think it was a good fake out for the second set. And I completely right. missed it because I don't know what I'd had the TV off. I was doing something on the computer, and Megan started talking about Down With Disease. And I was like, why are you saying that? It's like, because they're playing it. And I was like, we started the second set already? But I thought I had time. Like, usually what you'll get is the gag in the third set. Like, usually in a Fish New Year show, the third set will start, usually with some kind of thing leading up to them doing Auld Lang Syne at midnight, which they always do. And then whatever they do after that is usually symbolic, or fans think it is, like, and of course, when I say fans, I mean with a PH, as you do. They take that to as like some kind of symbolic song, as in like, this is kind of like where Fish is headed this year. If it's an old song, maybe that kind of vibe. If it's a new song that they really want to hit home with, it might be that. So I thought we were getting a standard second set. I was actually fairly shocked when all of it started, because I was not ready to be taken to Gamehenge, nor did I think it was happening. And if there was any part of me that did think it was happening, it wouldn't be for another hour or so. So they sprung it fairly early. And that was a big surprise. But yes, yeah, starting the second set with Down With Disease, which is a very standard way to open a second set.
Yeah, it's kind of a nice way. Probably it's two things. Let's kick the tires before we do this long extended story piece. And also let's throw a trail of breadcrumbs another direction, because they know what they're doing. They know exactly, like, okay, like people are going, okay, this is kind of what we expect. But they do Down With Disease, and then this kind of starts our track by track, but not completely. They do a song called Harpua, this funky little number that acts as the show's door to Gamehenge, so to speak. It's not played in its entirety, from what I understand, but it's a lot of fun. I love, after playing for a bit, Trey talking about the band's history of playing at Madison Square Garden. Like, there's been hot dog vendors and umbrellas and all this stuff. And then we move into talking about the boy with his cat. And in fact, I can, if I look real hard, I can see him. And then up from the stage, there's a bed, and there's a boy on the bed with his cat, Poster Nutbag.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I took it back. This is where I came in. Megan said Harpua. And when she said that, I was like, oh, Harpua is usually symbolic of something. I think they've played it 4 times in the last decade. It is an extreme rarity. Ooh. From their very, very early days. In fact, I will tell you that the first time that they played it was May 11th, 1987, at a club called Nectar's. You might know Nectar's because of the title of a picture of Nectar, which was the owner of Nectar's. Yep. It's his picture on the orange. I believe it's an orange. Might be another fruit I'm not familiar with.
Tangerine, something like that.
Yeah, it could be. So just to give a little idea of what Harpua is and how it's been used in the past, because this is an important gateway. Harpua is a coveted song because it's one of the songs that kind of loosely related to Gamehenge, but the story of Harpua is it's a story about Jimmy, who's got a cat, as you said, poster nutbag. And once this starts happening, he elevates up on a bed with the cat puppet. So this is all acted out. Now, every time in Harpua, Harpua is a dog, a mangy dog, who is outside, poster nutbag, jumps out the window. We get in a fight. There's a huge storm. After the storm clears, Jim's father tells him that poster nutbag has died. I actually said to Megan, like, as it was going, I was like, I just want to warn you, there's like some animal peril in this song. I did not know where it was going at that point. But poster nutbag always dies. And the way the song ends is Jimmy's father, Jimmy is usually played by Paige, and his father played by Mike. And Mike convinces him, because poster nutbag is dead, that he'll get him a goldfish. And Jimmy says, I want
a goldfish.
But the way the song usually ends is, I just want a dog. And then there's an ending part about there's a dog in the station, like a little jazzy part. And it's all about now he wants a dog, right? So as they were getting ready to go into the dog part, Cray stops it and starts narrating it again. Now, how Harpua has been used in the past. Harpua was also a springboard for one of the coolest things they ever did. In 1998, they played their Halloween show, and they covered, now I'm going to forget the name of this.
Was it Dark Side of the Moon?
No. It was, God damn it, it was Sweet Jane, Velvet Underground.
Oh, Velvet Underground, Logan? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah. It's the one with the red cover, red and white staircase on the cover.
October 31st, 1998, in Vegas, for set two, they play Loaded by Velvet Underground. This was very divisive amongst the fan community who previously saw them do the White Album, Quadrophenia, and Remain in Light by the Talking Heads. This is an album that people either weren't familiar with or whatever it was, and they perform it great. I'm not familiar with the album at all, but they do it well. Now, the thing is, the third set, the lore about it is that Trey is fucking huddled. It's on YouTube, the full third set. It is weird, strange, drugged out jam where Trey just like leaves the stage at some point and does whatever the fuck he's going to do. And it ends very weirdly. It's one of those shows where it was like, give me the most like unsettling fish show to listen to. We'll say third set of Halloween 98. Now, there's rumors that like there were crazy drugs in Las Vegas. They went overboard, or at least Trey did, or whatever. Who knows if we'll ever know. Because of that, I believe the next show, which was the 2nd of November, so they traveled to Utah to a place called the E Center. And in the second set, after doing a few songs, they played Harpua. Now, one of the disappointments about 98 was that they played Loaded instead of Dark Side of the Moon, which was what people had been clamoring for and thinking it was going to be. So there was obviously some disappointment. And they've done fake outs like that in the past. Sometime there was one year they thought it was going to be Thriller, so they played the Thriller music and then went into something else. So it's kind of like this was before they had like the fish bill. So this show in Utah, they play Harpua, and in the middle of Harpua, while Trey is talking, and this usually happens in Harpua, if not always, he starts telling a story that goes back in time and tells a story about something. So the story is about somebody traveling from Las Vegas, where things got pretty dark, right? Which obviously is a very obvious allusion to what had happened two nights before in Las Vegas. And usually, they'll say a song was playing on the radio. And if you listen to shows from like the 90s, you'll hear them do a little bit of Dying by Creative Soul. I Would Walk 500 Miles by the Flamers, Iron Man. And usually just like a chorus or a verse, and then they'll go back into the Harpoolas story. What they did in 98 was, he's telling the story and he says, and listening to your favorite song or album on the radio, and you hear the heartbeat from Dark Side of the Moon. Then they do Speak to Me, and then they do Breathe. And the moment, and this is fantastic to listen to, the moment that they go into time and the bells start chiming, and the audience realizes they're going to play all of Dark Side of the Moon, the place goes nuts. And the legend is that they learned it beginning to end on the bus between Vegas and Utah
God
and played it that
damn.
night. And for good measure, encored with the worst version of Smells Like Teen Spirit you'll ever hear. But nobody in that building was like, boy, that Teen Spirit really sucked. It was just like, you know what? Let's give them something else that they'd never expect. And it's so great to listen to, just to hear the crowd swell when they realize that. And one of the reasons they did was because this show was undersold. So it was kind of like, well, to reward all these people that actually made the trip, let's do it tonight. And they did. And I don't know that I've heard audience reaction like that until Gamehenge on New Year's. Those are like
Right.
the two big fish moments like that that I can think of. So Harpua usually gets you into the story.
Yep, I was gonna say there's a moment like just like that. We're just on the border of it as Trey is doing this narration, and he goes into like, where is the what? Like, I think he says something to the effect like, Jimmy's like, where is the nurturing older presence in my life, preferably in female form? And then Annie Goldstein comes on stage, playing Jimmy's grandma.
Annie Golden.
Oh, sorry. I mixed up
No,
with
no,
some.
sorry.
I mixed it up with something else. Annie Golden. Yeah.
Yes. So, and also there were some interesting things that happened. Like they played seven shows at Madison Square Garden a few months back, and it seems the reason that they did that was so this could be their 83rd show at Madison Square Garden to commemorate them starting in 1983, which is also something that Trey brings up. So when she comes out to greet Jimmy and start going into whatever story we're about to go into, Trey mentions that Jimmy's dad has been trying to buy him off with a new pet every time Poster Nutbag dies, which over 40 years is a lot of times, which I thought
Yeah.
was hilarious. Just kind of referencing the fact that this cat dies every time, and there's always, some kind of different end to the story. So Annie Golden comes out as Jimmy's grandmother after Poster Nutbag jumps out the window and dies. And she says to him that if somebody needs to comfort the boy after 40 fucking years, and there's a shit ton about this town that he knows nothing about. Now, this is where the other songs come into play. Paige at this point says, kind of like how the guy who owns the dog Harpua is the same guy that gave Esther the doll. Now, Esther is a very early Phish song about a little girl who gets a doll who ends up killing her. One of the dark songs in the Phish catalog, but it's fantastic. It's got like a creepy carnival organ, one of their best. In fact, parts of Esther are used in the narration, as music under the narration in the demo and in here as well. So yeah, I didn't know if you wanted to jump in at this
Yeah,
point
no,
for anything.
that's really cool. And then John's mentions Reba making meat, fake meat in the bathtub.
Fake meat in the bathtub, who we learn is Jimmy's cousin.
Yep.
And that's how Reba fits into the story. But then, and this is the just out of three huge moments before the reveal, leading up to the reveal. When Mike says, Then there was this dude, Colonel Forbin.
Forbin.
And as soon as he says that, people just are. And at this point, I'm like, and I'm texting Megan. I'm like, I think it might be happening, but I also know that Fitz loves to play a joke. This would be a cruel one. And they usually don't venture into too cruel. I'll just give an example. Give you two quick examples. They played December 31st, 99, Y2K. And it was a festival. They played an all-night, nine-hour set. But the whole plan was at midnight to kill all the power and be like, shit, like the world is ending, or, you know, all this shit that we were, you know, supposed to believe about turning off your computer before midnight, or else your computer would never work again. You know, all that. I lived through this. It was a thing.
Oh, that's hilarious. I just sidebar: all the people tripping on drugs, and you do that.
That's it.
There's going to be a freak out.
That's it. So like, you know, that was something they discussed that they didn't do. Now in 2019. They did a send in the clones kind of thing where they were on these risers and then a bunch of clones dressed in the same colors as them danced around. And it was this whole thing. And the platforms would go up and down and trays get stuck, 40, 50 feet up from the stage and does not come down. He's up there for a good half hour. They play You Enjoy Myself. He's sitting on the platform. And, you know, making jokes about maybe I should just jump and do like the great rock star death, you know, and people were automatically like, this is fake. And I talked to Rob about it and he's like, I don't think that they would pull that kind of prank. And what ends up happening is they don't leave the stage for the encore. They just go right into the encore. Then everybody leaves. They're like, bye, Trey. And he's still up there. Stagehands come up, they raise up Fishman's platform, they cable it to Trey's. Trey steps over onto Fish's platform, starts playing the drums, makes up a song called Rescue Squad in a tribute to those rescuing him, and comes down. No doubt in my mind that that was real. That was not something that was planned.
Yeah.
And you can see the thing jerk. Like you can tell when it gets stuck. And there are many times where Trey is, you see him just like the mic stands are like affixed to the platforms. There are several times he just grabs the mic stand for like balance. So I don't think they would go that far. But this was kind of like, I could see them maybe like teasing a game henge and not doing it, but that also might venture into maybe too cruel. Like, Let's tease them with the one thing that they've always wanted and not give it to them. So at this point, it might have been a little obvious, but he starts talking about Colonel Forbin. And then the kid says he's confused. Jimmy says he's confused. And Trey says, maybe this will help. He holds up a record with a rhombus on it. The rhombus is in Jersey. It's a place where he would go to write songs with his songwriting friend. So the rhombus is very significant. They wrote Divided Sky there, which is a huge part of several versions of the Game Henge story. So the album's got a rhombus on it, and he hands it to her. She says, it's time, and she drops the needle on the record, and they start playing The Man Who Stepped Into Yesterday, and the place goes 80% nuts, and then he says, I can't let you ring in another new year without telling you the real story of Game Henge, and you'll never see a place light up like that place lit up when she said that.
The cheer that I heard when they did that, like, just thinking about it right now is giving me goosebumps. Like, I've never heard a happier cheer in my life. Like, it's just like that many people like, oh shit, it's finally happening. It's finally fucking happening. Like, cause like when she said, when, not when, when she said, when Mike said Colin Fairman, like I heard kind of like a cautious cheer. And then once they said that, then it was like, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck, it's happening.
Yeah. Yep. That's when I started sending Megan the crying. And it wasn't only just, like audio. Like she got video of me like blubbering, my most vulnerable moment, turning the camera on myself. And the sweeping shot of the audience they do at this point is great. They've actually recut all the footage and they've put it up on YouTube for free, the entire Gamehenge part. But like even like the choir, they have like a choir addition to several songs, and the choir is coming up at this point, and just like all of it is so beautiful and grand. Just that whole the whole section where they're just playing the instrumental "Man Who Stepped In Yesterday" before he gets into the narration. If you're going to watch anything, watch Harp. And to be completely honest, the song portion of Harpua is rough. Right? It's not something they play a lot. It is rough. But when they start getting into the story of Jimmy, that's when it really, and I would say like it's a good 5 or 10 minutes that anybody that's curious about it, absolutely hit YouTube, the Fish Official channel, Gamehenge 4K for those with the capability. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful presentation for the beginning of this. And then once he started the narration, it was like, okay, like it was like an out of body experience. I was like, I'll never see this. Like, this is something they're never going to do again. It's been 29 years. It's not going to happen. And it happened.
It did. And then the rhombus starts to, like, the stage like has a
Yes.
rhombus on it, and it starts to kind of like come up, and then it's like that. You sent me one of the videos you sent, and I could just see how happy you were. And he's just, even from like your post the next day, like I can only imagine how big that was. Like I was still kind of like in disbelief, like even just with my little bit of knowledge, like wow, they really did that.
Yeah, and that was the thing. Like, I knew that I wouldn't turn anybody on to Phish that's skeptical about them, but anybody that wants to see a band give an audience the thing that they've wanted the most for 29 years is just fantastic. It's just like I said, I've never watched it and haven't gotten emotional. Chills now talking about it. Still can get tears when she says Gamehenge and they do that sweeping shot. And it's just like, but also like when I was talking to Rob about it, he's like, well, it makes sense. Like if they're gonna do Gamehenge, why not do it big? So yeah, I get that. Like if they would have just come out on a random day and did Gamehenge with narration, okay. But they're this is the opportunity that they have to make it grand, and that's exactly what they did. Now, the one thing that like we've said that the story changes throughout every telling of it, but the song order also changes, as does the songs that are included. There are some songs that are in every telling of it. I have a list of those and I'll mention those as we go through the track by track. But there was a point during the show where I was like, okay, well, what are they going to follow this up with in the second set? Like they still have the gag and we're still like an hour and a half away from it. And I just nonchalantly said to Megan, like, there are other songs in the quote unquote game hand circle. If they go all out and they say more than like your standard 1 hour, 70 minutes of game hand, I don't think there's any better. Like they've already given you the amazing part, right? If they're now going to do like Gamehenge on steroids, which is exactly what they did,
Oh
like
yeah.
they started throwing other songs from Gamehenge in, and I was like, I can't. And look, it wasn't a hard thing to call, but it was like if they have this much time, and also it was like second set's going to have to wrap up. And what they end up doing, and we'll go into this, is it leads into the third set and into the countdown at New Year's with the new ending for the story. So it always changes. What we're going to do for the track by track is the tracks that were included in this telling of Gamehenge, I believe is what we decided on.
Yep, we're gonna do the 2023 New Year's Eve set list. I'm sure
Yes.
other stuff will come up along the way, but yeah, we're gonna try and stick to these songs. And we've kind of, I don't know if we've properly talked about the first song, "Man Who Stepped Into Yesterday," but that was definitely it's kind of a transitional piece. It's meant to kind of bring us into the world of Gamehenge. Trade does a lot of narration over the top of it, but it's really pretty, like you said, just absolutely gorgeous.
And it's the version that they would play live, which interestingly enough, they never played as part of the Gamehenge until this show. It's a completely instrumental piece, and the part that they open this Gamehenge show with is kind of halfway through the song. There's a piano and guitar thing that happens for a little while, and then Trey goes into a very delicate, kind of like a waltz time. Really delicate, beautiful guitar piece, with Mike doing some really, really kind of, quiet bass, and then the choir coming in and all that. It was great to hear it as, and it also threw me off because I wasn't used to it starting with this, but obviously this is where they're going if they're playing The Man Who Stepped Into Yesterday. But it's a beautiful piece, and then after it. They kind of go into the Esther interlude music, and that's where the narration starts.
Yep. Which leads us into our first, I guess you could say, proper song, The Lizards.
Lizards.
I love this fucking song. I hadn't heard it until getting ready for this, but it's incredibly catchy. The chorus is well written. I come from a land of darkness. I come from a land of doom. I come from a land of Gamehenge, the land of the big baboon. But I'm never ever going back there. And I couldn't if I tried, because I come from the land of the lizards, and the lizards they have died, and the lizards they have died. So good. So good. So catchy.
Passing through the corridor, I came upon an aging man leaning against the wall with the armor. He was on his way to see the king. Wilson, Wilson, Wilson. He led me through the streets of Prussia talking as he tried to crush above that scurried underneath his blue heel. He said there was a place where we should go. So he led me through the forest to the edge of a lagoon by which we wandered till we reached a bubbly stream. The night grew very quiet as we stood there. He lifted up his visor and he turned to me. He said, I come from the land of darkness. He said, I come from the land of doom. He said, I come from the land of demons. From the land of the big baboon. But I never ever go back there. And I couldn't get right back. Cause I come from the land of lizards. And the lizards, they have died.
I was trying to harmonize with you, but it's hard to do over Zoom. But my favorite thing about this song has always been, I mean, there's a lot that's great in this song. Cage's backing vocal in the chorus, I'll never get that high. And they both Trey and Paige are pushing it as high as they can do at the
Oh
age of
yeah.
60.
Yeah.
that was probably the hardest vocal for them, maybe. If you go and watch the 94, holy shit. Like, the vocals on those are flawless. But, yeah, the Lizard, and it's just kind of like a really cool, like, seven-ish minute piece with a couple different parts. There's a great ending, you know, the chorus is wonderful. Great ending instrumental section with the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And these songs in particular, a lot of them, have that kind of Trey guitar melody that you find at the end of the song. Multi-part songs, and the guitar parts are really, to me, what makes these songs so great. And the songs are great on top of it. But it's been performed straight through, with one exception, the 91 show. They did not play it. I believe the 91 show, it seems to be, this was Rob's theory, they kind of play a few songs from it, and then at some point Trey decides, we're just going to do Gamehenge. So it does kind of like the rest of the songs in a weird order, or because some of them have been played already. So the 91 show is kind of a weird one in that respect. It's kind of like a Gamehenge after the fact, after they already played some songs from Gamehenge, and then we're like, yeah, let's just play the rest of Gamehenge. But the Lizards is it always sets the scene, you know, where the Lizards live. I also brought up some geeky notes.
To tell.
The fish.net has crazy stats for each song. The Lizards first played in 88. They have played it 327 times. In the course of 1901 shows. So it's more of a rarity these days. It was in sets a lot more in the earlier days. So this is kind of like this was one I really wanted to see in my first show. I obviously did not get it. Yeah. I did not get any of these songs in any of my shows except for the one at the end that they have added in. But it's just a fantastic upbeat, and the chord progression in the verse is really nice, kind of like the descending arpeggio thing that Trey is doing. Just like, if you're a guitar fan, even if you can't get down with the lyrics or the melodies or the vocals, there's great guitar stuff, instrumental passages in these songs that are just I would have a hard time having anybody find fault with.
That outro solo is just out of this world, triumphant.
And that's, yeah. And you know what? The interesting thing about getting into Fish, like having so many songs, and not just the songs in the albums, there are another 50 songs on top of that, just that are probably, I'm estimating, but are like things you'd hear Carini, you know, like in a Fish show, that are staples that just weren't on albums. So it's not just listening to the albums, but like as you listen to these shows, like there are so many great moments in these songs where I might have, you know, a couple shows after hearing this for the first time, I might have been like, I don't quite remember the Lizards, although I do because it was on the Clifford Ball and it was one of the first things I heard and I fucking loved it. But it's like these little bits in Fish songs that are memorable, that when they come around the second time, you're like, I really like that bit. And when they come around the third time, you're waiting for it. And then the fourth time, you're like, I fucking love this song. So, you know, it often takes time, but, you know, the parts that are great are what just, you know, even like the Fish songs that I didn't love, there's something in them that I love. There's not a Fish song that I skip, which is, for a band with this kind of catalog, is kind of insane. But it comes down to, and this is something I wanted to bring up about the jams, like I love how these guys sound. So they can jam and I'm going to love it, but that's not how it was at first. Like I had to acquire the taste of, like, you know, sometimes Paige is going to bang on the piano and fight with Trey over who is leading right now, or you know, or the piano might be a little too barroom for me, which is not something I love. But you know, when you hear their interplay, like it's to the point now where, yeah, I want them to jam because I want to hear them do something I've never heard because I love how they sound. And that's the moment when the jams make sense. And it took years to get to that point. So I completely understand anybody who's like, yeah, I'm not down with the jams because it took a long time for me to be as well. But that's how I ended up loving them. And those things, just the more you listen, the more it just becomes kind of part of your DNA. And it's, you know, it's just all wonderful. But you know, yeah, enough of that sidetrack. The Lizards, fantastic.
Yeah,
fantastic.
I got two more things I want to say about it. I really, okay. Paige killing the piano there. I really gained an appreciation for him more as a player watching this whole show. He is fantastic on the ivories. Absolutely amazing. Mm. And the choir vocals, again, nice touch. Really, 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 really dig it.
Yeah. And just to give a little bit of, and I'm pulling this from Wikipedia, you know, before the Lizards, Cray kind of sets up who Colonel Forbin is, and it's, you know, what I've said, you know, he's a lonely man, steps through this door, and then that's how the story starts. The Lizards, and this is kind of going by the man who stepped into yesterday's story. And I probably won't do this for all of them, but I might just to introduce the characters. As on Wikipedia, Forbin finds himself in a corridor where he meets an aging knight called Rutherford the Brave. Rutherford tells him of the Lizards who are now all but extinct due to Wilson and his theft of the Helping Friendly book. He leads Forbin outside to a raging river. The knight dives in, but due to his armor, he sinks. This is all told in the song. A lot of the narration clears up stuff that is already in the lyrics of the songs. So a lot of the storytelling is part of the lyric.
Yep. Yeah. Love it. Love the Lizards. And also, before we move into the next song, the Lizards invade the stage. Like, we got lizard back guessers for a visual, which was pretty freaking cool.
Yeah. And they were great. They were also adorable.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. All right, up next, we prepare for battle with Punch You in the Eye. A nice funky rocker, which to me, that's kind of like, you know, the band's signature sound. It kind of shifts into a jam that, you know, it wouldn't have been out of place like on, like in Southern rock. And there seems like there's a, on stage, there's some like semi-synchronized dancing going on. It seems like Mike and Trey are bouncing at the same time.
They do have little bits of stage choreography that they do, and that's one of them.
Yeah, I dig this one. Some nice Santana-esque guitar here. Love it. And also, is that Colonel Forbin in the audience in a kayak?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if that was like him or someone like, you know, I'm sure people come dressed up to these shows. I was like, that's totally plausible. That could be a fish fan.
I'm fairly certain when I watched it, I thought it was him. It certainly seemed like him to me.
Yeah.
But it was a kind of like the shot from like the soundboard.
Yeah, it's very brief.
Where
it's
like,
very brief. You just see him go by and that's it. I'm like,
yep. Yeah, that's I thought it was him. And there's a lot of stuff that kind of happens in the audience throughout as well. Interestingly enough, Punch You in the Eye is not on the original demo set, and it's never been part of any of the live versions of Gamehenge until now. But it's something that they often use as an opener. I believe that... I think it was 2022. They played Philly and I had tickets for both nights. It was supposed to be my second and third show and I got COVID. And I believe they opened. Yeah, I believe. And I didn't go and I was fucking bummed. I believe that they opened one of those shows with Punch You in the Eye. And I was very upset because it was another song that I wanted at my first show. And it was going to be a long shot. They played it and I was like, well, great, thanks.
Ouch.
Yeah,
punched in the eye by COVID.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, great song. I don't have too much more to say about that one, but yeah, I dig it. You got any more facts on that one?
Yeah, we can. I can tell you that it's been played 163 times, so slightly rarer than the Lizards. First played in 89. And as it's not, you know, part of the story, it is mentioned on Wikipedia as one of the additional Gamehenge songs. And it tells the story of a sailor who passes through Gamehenge during Wilson's reign and his subsequent escape from Wilson's jail.
Yep.
It's so funky. I love how the beginning kind of, it's a little bit laid back funky. And then when they kick into the main riff, just fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. This is another one that when I saw it on Clifford Ball, before I even knew it was what Gamehenge was, I loved it. And it was so great to hear it here because I did not expect it. And it was the first thing that I was like, maybe they are going to give us Gamehenge Deluxe. So yeah, I was very, and it was a great place. Great placement for it. You know, still upbeat. And fantastic.
Everybody, it's a Sly Dog here again in the episode. I wanted to say thank you for listening to part two of mine and Craig's Fish Gamehenge Multi-Beast Bonanza. It's been a lot of fun putting this together. Tune in next week, hopefully, you know, life permitting, that I will be posting the final part of the track by track. And you can see how the story of Gamehenge wraps up. Thank you for listening thus far. But until then, play us out, Fish.
Pretending on the stage. Don't wanna be a writer with my thoughts out on the page. Don't wanna be a painter, cause everyone comes to look. Don't wanna be anything when my life's an open book. A dream, it's true. See it through. If I could be, wasting my time with you. Don't wanna be a farmer working in the sun. Don't wanna be an outlaw always on the run. Don't wanna be a climber reaching for the top. Don't wanna be anything where I don't know when to stop. A dream, it's true, but I'd see it through. If I could be, wasting my time. You might have read, you'll see what I might have said. To hear it, come waste your time with me. Come waste your time with me.
Listening to the Sly Dog Music Cast. If you want to know what's going on, follow me on Twitter at Sly Dog Music Cast or Facebook at Sly Dog Music Cast. Thanks again for listening. Peace, love, and music.